to We Knows Parenting, the parenting podcast hosted by real-life parents. I'm Beth Newell.
I'm Peter McNerney.
We are not experts, but we do have two small children.
Real-life children. In this podcast, we compare notes and try to figure out what we knows about parenting. Hello, Beth.
Hey.
How are you?
Pretty good.
We just had a cleaning lady show up, so you're feeling extra relaxed to me.
I mean, it makes me uncomfortable when you talk about it here.
You don't like the world knowing that we pay a woman to come twice a month to clean our apartment?
Yeah, I feel like it ruins my street cred of like being a real person who understands real problems.
You're not. You're spoiled.
I am now.
Yeah. How does it feel? You're not spoiled. You earned this. It's not like that was. This was not a simple choice to hire somebody because you're spending some money. It's not a ton of money, yeah. But there is something incredibly indulgent about it. How does that make you feel?
Like I just described, I feel very happy to have it and very uncomfortable to have people know that I have it.
Well, you're on a podcast now, so now you have to be honest with the whole world.
We're having a better week this week. No one was out of town. No one was really sick.
Was this a full week? This was a full week of no one having to stay home sick.
We did it.
What an incredible victory. Oh my gosh. So the big thing this week for me, last Saturday, we had the Story Pirates, arts education company that I work for, had our big New York benefit, and Bryn and Maven came to the show, and this is the very first time that they've ever seen me on stage. And I gotta say, I think I was pretty good.
Yeah, I think they enjoyed it. I was
in terms of entertaining my children.
I was more focused on just like them getting through the day and like getting into the city and all those logistics.
You did that all on your own. I was gone.
My sister was there when I got there, but
still,
they did well. They were. It's always awkward because you're like driving into the city, finding a parking garage, getting a double stroller out of the trunk, like putting kids in the stroller while the parking garage guy waits for you to do that. Then like pushing a double stroller through Midtown New York City and hoping the place you arrive at has a place for you to put a stroller.
So you're saying you miss living in Brooklyn and you wish that we'd stay there instead of moving away to have
kids? No, not at all. I also went to our old neighborhood this week, which was bittersweet because I haven't been there in years, I think. And it's so much more gentrified than when we lived there, so, which to a certain degree makes me be like, wow, if we were still here, we would have this restaurant and this restaurant.
Yeah.
But it also, walking to my sister's apartment, I was like, you know, I don't miss the late night walk home from the subway where you have to be on a little bit on edge and make sure you're safe the whole time.
Sure. Something I've never thought about.
And I 100% would not have enjoyed dragging two kids around there.
You know, it's so incredible to me now because we'd still be there if I was the only one making that decision. Because when you're like, I'm having a baby, we need to move. I was like, what? We have time? You're like, I want a washer and dryer. I'm like, why? We're okay.
Do you understand now why we needed a washer and dryer?
Yeah, of course I do. The first week of having... So we moved out of Brooklyn a week before Bryn was born because it was complicated. It took us forever.
We were trying to close on our new place and it was...
And we were supposed to be here like 2 months before he was born. 1 week before he is born, we move. That's why half of our apartment is painted, because the other half was, Bryn was born and we just stopped painting, and that was 3.5 years ago. But
anyway, Story Pirates. The show went well. The kids both sat calmly through most of it. I think Maven got a teeny bit antsy right towards the end.
It was a benefit performance. So it was like an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And they stayed locked in.
Compared to like a regular Story Pirate show, which I think would have been just stories, this had a lot of breaks to talk about Story Pirates and what they do and like fundraising stuff that is not for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So considering that, I think they did incredible.
Oh, yeah.
But and then Bryn at the end got to push a pie into someone's face, which was very exciting.
Oh my gosh. I was backstage watching him the whole time. So part of the fundraising to make it less awkward to ask an audience for money, raising certain amounts, kids come up and get to throw pies into adults' faces. So one of my colleagues found Bran, brought him up to stage, and he was terrified and could not have been more intrigued and excited about what the hell was happening.
I was surprised he was actually so calm about going up on stage. Like, yeah. I think if it hadn't been Story Pirates and he wasn't so familiar with like the Story Pirates podcast and the songs and you being part of Story Pirates, I think he would have not wanted to get on stage for like a random show.
But then he did it. He smashed the pie into a stranger's face and then booked it off stage.
Yeah, he just ran off and stage.
Like he had done something wrong. He knew because he was like, this is messy and mommy and daddy talk about messes a lot. And they're asking me to do it and there's a whole room full of people watching. And he did it so delicately and ran away.
Well, it's funny because we have it on tape from our phones. And it's like, I think he was like, this is a funny idea. Someone's telling me to do this. And then I think when he saw this person's face covered in whipped cream or shaving cream or whatever, he all of a sudden was like, what have I done?
What have I done?
And he just fled the stage and came back to his seat.
I had so many of those moments growing up where I just suddenly found myself in the middle of something very stupid. And I was like, what have I done? I remember being in the car with my mom when I was probably 8. And for the first time, really considering the cigarette lighter in the car and just pushing it in. And then it popped out and I pulled it out and it's all hot. And then just looked at it. And then I looked at my mom who was driving the car. And then just without thinking, I just put it right down on the plastic armrest between the two seats. And then smoke started coming up in the middle of the car. My mom looks and goes, what are you doing? And that was the moment I snapped out of it. I go, I don't know. And I was just holding this thing. And that mark was there for the next 10 years.
It was very similar to Bryn, who woke up this morning and got a hold of a pen and colored all over our insurance claim check.
He drew two frowny faces on the insurance claim check. He missed all the vital information on the check.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay.
And hopefully. The Chase online app deposit didn't seem to have a problem with the scribbles all over it. He also drew all over the bathroom door and immediately goes, I drew on the door. Like he knew he had done something wrong, but was also sort of excited about it.
So last night, I didn't tell you, I gave them green smoothies with dinner. And he, of course, spilled a huge amount of smoothie all under the table. But it was like all over him and the floor and like in his shoe that was on the floor. And then when I like was done cleaning it up, I walked back in and Maven was like, mess, mess. And she was pointing at the wall and it was also sprayed all up the wall.
From one spill?
Yeah, I don't know what he did. He just like flung it all over the place.
Good work.
But I was glad I stayed very calm and he was like, oh no. And I was like, it's okay. It's amazing how calm you get with your kids just constantly destroying everything you own.
Oh yeah. I think you've come a longer way because I was sort of already comfortable with destruction. And you've picked your battles.
Well, we've talked about this is a little bit of a class issue because if you have less money and things get destroyed, it's natural to have a extreme reaction.
It's true. Boy, thinking about stuff that I've broken growing up, I really am spoiled because things get broken. I'd be like, ah, shoot. I'll have to get another disc, man.
And if that happened in my house, they would never let you live it down for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Newell's never forget.
Our next segment is called We Knows Wins. This is where we share some of our parenting wins for the week. Peter, what's your win?
I have a little one, and it's so thoroughly satisfying. Bryn, when he turned 2, ever said terrible twos. Bryn, I don't think it was a terrible 2. I think when he turned 3, he was a terrible 3. But he's coming out of it.
I think he was a terrible 2. It's just that the terrible 3s are so much worse than the 2s.
So much more power. Yeah. So that 3 to 3.5, he would say, I'm not getting dressed. And the fight to get him dressed felt like I was doing something wrong.
Well, he would have like an animalistic rage and his body would seize up. And it was like,
And I would tackle him into his clothes. I'd pin him down and he'd be like, you're hurting me. And I'm just like, I've been patient for 10 minutes and I'm going to put these pants on your legs. And that's
right.
Feels terrible to
when,
do that.
When they're two, they're more distractible. You can kind of like figure out a solution or just overpower them more easily. And they haven't learned how to create a scene.
Yeah. And with Brynn, you know, when he was that three and he's like, no, I'm not going to do this thing. You try to soften up. You try to negotiate and it's not happening. And then you just know that it's going to turn into like a wrestling match to take a thing away from him or to put him into a jacket or
so
whatever.
So what's your win?
Today, this morning, a lot of times he'll have a toy in his hand when we leave. And I'm like, you can't bring it into school because it's going to get lost. It's going to be a fight. So I don't let him take stuff into school.
Right.
So we get there. It's about to get out and he's got the toy in his hand. And I don't ask. I don't, you know, I just say, do you want to put the toy in your bag or do you want to leave it in the car? Those are your options. He goes, I'm taking it into school. I'm like, no, you can't take it into school. He goes, no. And it was like a no, no, no. And it was almost getting to that point where I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to rip it out of his hands and take him in and he's going to scream and I'm going to walk into daycare with two screaming kids. And then I had this moment and I said, Brynn, if you don't give it to me in 5 seconds, I'm going to take it. And you don't like that, right? You'll probably cry. So I'm going to do that unless you want to give it to me right now. And the most shocking thing in the world happened, which he goes, okay. And he hands it to me. I was like, what? And I was like, I was so unexpected that he thought it through. And he remembers that he doesn't like it when that happens. And he knows that like when I force him to do something, he's going to scream and hate it. And so just that, I'm going to do that. Let's not bother.
He has flipped a weird switch recently where he suddenly can comprehend consequences because mm-hmm. I've had all of a sudden more success with being like, Brynn, if you keep screaming at Maven, I'm going to turn the TV off. And he's like, okay, yeah, I don't want you to. Like, he'll actually stop doing something, which is just a new phenomenon.
And he'll try to explain things to Maven now. And get frustrated that she doesn't understand. She's like, Maven, if you stop, you'll get the thing. She's like, no. He's like, oh, Maven.
Yeah, it's funny to see with her because she's just starting to figure out stubbornness.
Yeah.
And he's finally coming out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, she's embracing her terrible twos. Now it's time for a new segment. We knows differently. This is where we discuss something that we clearly disagree on. And Beth has something that she has not discussed with me. So let's all find out together.
So what I wanted to talk about is you shot a video of Brynn this week where he said, I used to be bigger like you. I used to have a beard like you. And this is something we disagree on, which is that I believe in past lives.
And I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I would argue in this video he's talking about past lives.
Well, you know what? I knew that you were going to say that. And I'll be honest that I almost didn't post it because I knew you would love it so much. And then I thought, that's petty. This is funny. I'm going to post it. It's also cutting out the buildup to it. Which is, so in it, he goes, I had a beard when I was your age, and then I was Maven's age, and I didn't have a beard, and now I'm my age again. That's what it appears in the video. Mm-hmm. But boy, that seems pretty cyclical. You know what? Let's just listen to the audio and listen to Brynn explain his quote-unquote past lives. What are you telling me?
I was your age.
You were my age?
Yeah, I was.
When?
When I had a beard like that.
Oh, so you used to be old?
Yeah.
What happened?
Then I stopped growing.
Oh, and then you shrunk? You got small?
Yeah. No. I didn't got small. I stopped growing into a dot.
Into a what?
Into a dot.
Into a dot?
No, into an dot.
N dot?
Yeah.
What's that?
Um, That's right. You can stop growing.
Oh.
You stop growing.
So you used to have a beard?
Yeah, like you. You have a beard.
I use the same beard like you.
Have a beard.
Yeah. So what happened to your beard?
I was Maven's age. And now.
So when you were Maven's age, you had a beard?
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't have a beard?
No.
Did you have a beard?
No.
No. When did you have a beard?
And then I was my age again.
Oh, so I'm a little confused about the timeline. At one point, you were my age.
And then I was Maven's age, and now I was turning into my age back.
Oh, so how old am I?
My about 40 degrees.
You think I'm 40 degrees?
Yeah.
Is that old?
I think you are.
It seems like very clearly it's the circle of life. But before that, we were talking about, I said, Bryn, you're going to turn 4. You're going to grow bigger. And he said, no, I'm going to stop growing. And he was doing this, I don't want to get older thing. So we were circling around the language of getting smaller and getting bigger. And he goes, no, I want to get smaller. I want to get big like you. And then it became sort of this word soup of ideas. And then you saw that as a later thing. But I bet if you saw the whole thing, you'd still make the same argument you're making now.
Okay. Well, it still rings true to me.
Yeah, I know. Do we want to get into why?
Why I believe in this particular instance or why I believe in general?
Believe it at all.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
Oh, boy, yeah.
I just...
Let's not get into it. I just, like, that's a whole thing. I think we... So this is really interesting about us, which is I am very much, I trust what I see and what I touch and, you know. And I believe there's a logical explanation for everything. And you are much more intuitive. And you trust how you feel. And that leads you to being really into believing things.
But I would argue that I didn't used to believe in any of these things, and I'm basing my belief on experiences I had, physical experiences.
Sure. I don't doubt that there's reasons for you to believe what you believe. But what's interesting, because I learned a long time ago, because at the beginning I was very much like, you know, that's crazy, right? Here's why. And obviously those would be pointless fights. And now it's like, oh, okay, I can accept that people process the world differently and it's good for them, and that I shouldn't, what a waste of time to like try to talk somebody out of something like that. So I think we've developed, like, I don't touch those things. I certainly don't, one, I don't indulge in it because I don't enjoy it that much, but I don't criticize it at all. And so it's a little bit of a like, that's your stuff, and I don't get too far into it because I don't want to get into it and then be disrespectful. But I do feel like I've gotten to the point where I can have a conversation with you about it and not let my own...
Constant need to buzzkill?
Yeah. It's no one wants to feel wrong, and especially me. And that's been a big lesson to turn that off. To like, I don't need to be right about this. I can just listen.
I think the thing that's frustrating for me, not to get on too much of a tangent, but I feel like people who identify as atheists, they have this like need to explain their side of things, which is like a side that more spiritual people are not discounting. Like, it's not like we have never heard those arguments before.
Yeah.
And the need to be right about it not existing is as ridiculous as the need to be right about what I believe. I'm just saying what I believe. I'm not arguing that everyone needs to agree on that as fact.
It's just the if I allow you to believe that, then this, it makes me feel unstable, like I don't know what I know. And that's the emotional dumb part of our brains that can't let disagreements of fact lie. You know, which gets into today's political culture
anyway,
right now.
I think what I've noticed is really interesting in my mom Facebook group is people have posted different stories of like their kids referring to past lives or their kids making statements that would imply that they are like the reincarnation of their grandparent or something like that. And I think the stories are really interesting. And I think there's often a lot of very strong evidence for it being true.
And I, that like, oh, this kid, how could they possibly know that? And for me, like, we have these association machines inside of our skull, and our job, your brain is automatically comparing things to look for patterns, to compare to things we know so that we can feel safe about our environments. And so it's that, like, your brain is automatically going to associate this data with something you know. And so that, like, oh, that must be this. Horoscopes, astrology is...
But I think you're not listening to the stories. You're not, like, reading any of these
examples.
You were
right. I'm not giving it my full attention because I know that I'm going to be a jerk about it.
But I think some of these stories are, like, beyond, like coincidence.
I won't think so. I know that I will listen and be like, there's a reasonable explanation for this. The simplest explanation is probably true, which is we've got very faulty, easily tricked brains. Let's not get into it. We're doing it now. But, I think it's been a great success recently how we can let these points of view exist and not let it destroy us.
Yeah, you don't seem agitated at all, God, right now.
I just fucking hate it because it's just like, it's just you are writing, you're filling in the blanks. It has given you no, I'm just kidding. But email me if you agree with me. wenosepod@gmail.com. Don't agree with me, just
please,
I'm not going to read it.
Send us your interesting stories about your kid's reincarnation or your child seeing spirits or guides around them deceased loved ones. We want to hear it all.
I don't. I want to hear dads out there who
I want to hear angry dads.
I want to hear angry dads who need the world to know that they're right. Explain to me how neuroscience works. And how we are susceptible to the idea of magic to justify our own wandering synapses.
Yeah, I
want
to hear from dads who teach kids about the importance of imagination and then refuse to have any imagination about the world around them.
I love the way the human mind works and that we can trick our dumb brains into believing these fantasy worlds. I just know that they're fake.
You know everything?
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
I do regret that language. We know nothing. We knows nothing.
This next segment's called Did You Knows? This is a segment where Peter learns and shares a child or parenting-related fact.
I got a fact for you. Are you ready for the fact?
Yeah, lay it on me.
All right, I'm going to never sing again on the podcast. That's not true. I'm going to sing a lot. All right, this fact comes from a source that I didn't write down, but I'm going to trust that it's true because I wrote it down at one point. The longest study of humans ever conducted, the 75-year-long Harvard Grant study, found that professional success in life comes from having done chores as a kid.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Do you feel, how does that make you feel? Did you do chores? What was your chores like?
Yeah, we did chores. I think it's really interesting because I was just talking about this online, which is like, how do you not kill your kids' creative dreams while also giving them pragmatic information about how to like go after your dreams with still being able to pay rent and stuff? Like, you don't want to give them too much anxiety about those things, but you also want them to have a sort of realistic expectation of the world.
Yeah, you don't
want to
go, be a theater major, it'll be easy.
Right. You want to go, be a theater major, but know that this is a dangerous decision you're making.
Well, you know, my parents didn't, I was a theater major, and they were thrilled.
Yeah.
Because I was different than my brothers.
Anyway.
Because they hated their other sons, and they were so glad I was different. Not really.
Can I talk?
Oh, my gosh. I just got a glare that I can feel in my gut. Oh, sorry you all had to witness that. I apologize. Go ahead.
Do you have anything else to say before I go on?
It is still cold outside, and I'm like, where's summer?
So here's the thing about chores. I think we had chores growing up, but it was very like, you just have to do this. There's no reward. We're just going to be mad at you if you don't. And there wasn't really like a system. It was just sort of like all of a sudden everyone would get worked up about how much needed to be done. And I think...
everyone would just get worked up.
You know, like your mom starts having a little bit of a panic attack of the crushing weight of being a mother of three children and looking at the filthy mess surrounding her. And then, you know, she starts exploding at everyone. And then you like miserably run and do those chores and everyone's angry. And
so it was an anxiety-based system.
Yeah. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's the best system. I think, you know, like outlining, I think kids' responsibilities when they're older, maybe having like more of a clear expectation so that they can try to calmly meet it without being whipped into a frenzy would be good. And I also, I know this is probably not like realistic for everyone financially, but like to have at least a small monetary reward or some sort of reward so that kids kind of understand the value of like earning something, I think is a good lesson to have going into the workforce.
I had to, there was some chore I had to do every Sunday, and I don't remember what I was when I was really, really little, but I mowed the lawn, and I hated it, and I would wait till the last second till like the sun started going down, and I had to mow the lawn, and I'd get paid. And if I didn't do it, I'd still have to do the job, but then I would not get paid. And it was the regularity, and in the winter I had to like clean the whole basement or something. But the regularity of that in retrospect is the like, oh, that's having a job. You know, that's being dependable and having a routine is such an important skill. Whereas if it is, I think if it is more that like, oh, do this thing because we got to do this right now. That's good, too, to learn to like take care of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's
I think there really is something to that. Every Sunday, you're taking care of yourself. You're making sure this happens.
Yeah. I think, you know, at a certain age, you should be able to make requests of your children and get their help. I just think the having at least some routine element of it, I think, is like a nice way to set clear expectations.
So when do we, what age does that start? Because I can't get Bryn to do anything. Can you pick up your jacket, buddy? Nope.
Well, I think now that he's finally starting to understand consequences, we can do more of that. And there needs to be more like, you can play with this toy after you put this toy away.
Oh, putting things away. He can't wrap his brain around why you would do that.
I think he's starting to understand a little bit because he's like singing the cleanup song the other day.
Oh, yeah.
So I think he's starting to like actually pick up on that.
Well, he loves coming in to the apartment and flinging off his jacket in a way that makes certain that the sleeves get pulled inside out so that they're impossible.
This is something that you do. You do it with every single shirt you wear. Every time you take off a shirt. I think it's the little dramatic flair that you both have for living your lives.
I mean, is there anything more fun than like flinging off a piece of clothing?
I guess it's fun if you're not the one doing the laundry later.
Well, that's what I do every single time. That's what we call hyperbole. Because I most certainly, most of the time, throw all of my clothes into the hamper. Not every time.
When we were on vacation with my family and my grandmother intercepted a load of our laundry and started folding it before I could get to it. And she said that literally every single shirt was turned inside out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I do that. I don't care if the laundry comes out and my shirts are inside out. I put them in the drawer inside out. I'll take care of it when I need to put it on.
Yeah.
I know that you're not the same way.
Well,
that's a compromise
we've reached where I don't turn your shirts right side out because I'm not going to do that for you.
But I do it for you. I turn all of your shirts right side.
But how often are they turned inside out?
Often.
No.
Laundry. Yes. Sometimes you throw clothes in there like... It's a long sleeve shirt that was in a sweatshirt, and you took both of them off together, and so they're wrapped up, and they go straight into the laundry.
I don't think that's crazy.
Well, I don't care, but you're the one saying I don't do that. But I do your clothes exactly the way you want them.
Thank you.
I mean, it took me a little while to figure out what that is, but I care. This next segment is Listeners Wanna Knows, where we take some listener questions. All right, we got some mail, some email. We got a really great question, Beth, from Aubrey from New Mexico. I'm going to read her email right now. Hi, Peter and Beth. I'm an elementary school teacher, elementary school social worker in New Mexico. I've quickly become a We Know super fan. Thank you. Blah, blah, blah. Compliments for us. Here it is. My husband and I are on the fence about having kids. He says he will have kids because he knows how important it is to me. And he says I will be a good mom, which makes him happy. He says he feels it will be really positive because we are both in a good place in our lives. However, he doesn't have much general interest in kids. Nephews, baby cousins, kids at the store, etc. do not interest him or make him smile ever. I work with kids with disabilities all day and still want to hang out with my nephews and feel a strong desire to have kids of my own. Peter and Beth, how do you feel? How did you feel before you had kids? Was there a sudden or gradual change in your perspective on having kids? Or have you both always looked forward to it? Sound like good parents, thank you. And I'm interested to know. My old school family says men are usually not excited to have kids, but do well once they are here. And the culture in New Mexico is pretty quote-unquote traditional, a.k.a. a woman's place in the home, etc. The patriarchy is real, smiley face. Would love your perspective. Thank you, Aubrey. A lot of great questions in there.
Wow.
Do you want to first tackle where what we thought before we had kids, what our ideas were?
Yeah.
Did we ever talk about it beforehand?
I feel so many ways about this question. I think the thing about us is that prior to having kids, I think we both love kids.
Yeah.
Like I know that if there's a baby or like a 2-year-old in the room, I wanted in on that. Like
yeah.
And I think you also are like reasonably interested in children.
Yeah. I mean, I work for Story Parts. I've worked with kids for 15 years, but that's not why I got into it.
Right.
I saw a Story Parts show and I thought it was so joyous and funny. I wanted
but
to do it.
Compared to the average person, your one-to-one interaction with a child is like pretty
true.
At ease.
Oh, that was also my intro into your family. Was coming for a big family gathering, and I was scared of everybody, so I just hung out with your 6-year-old cousins and
yeah.
entertained them because they were easier to talk to than adults.
Well, I feel really complicated about this because I think, given that we both liked kids a lot before we had kids, and I think I had fairly realistic expectations for having kids because I babysat a lot before becoming a mom.
And we both worked at a school for 6 years.
Yeah, and we both worked with kids. And I still think, in spite of all of that, having a baby is so much harder than anyone could ever possibly imagine.
Yeah. Well, it's just you don't really understand it until you've done it. And it's both so much more manageable than you'd think and so much more horrible than you think because it's just an abstract concept until it's your day-to-day life.
And I in addition to the feeling like it's like the most insanely hard thing you could ever do, I also think it's like the most rewarding thing you could ever do.
Oh yeah. So I have so many things to say about this. But first of all, we did not we've said this before, we planned neither one of our children. They were both complete accidents because we're total idiots.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is like assuming you don't hate the idea, I think what I think makes it a little more palatable for me is I think we knew at some point we were going to have kids.
Yeah.
So the fact that they were accidents is like, yes, overwhelming. But
did we ever discuss that or did we both just assume that's what we were in this for?
We discussed having kids. We knew that we both
I guess. I just don't remember. But I will say
we had a whole song about it.
Oh, that's right. full disclosure. When we were very young, Beth was 21. I think we got high one night and sang songs about our future kids.
We weren't that young when we sang that song.
That's the most intimate thing
but that's scary.
That we just shared with the whole world.
But that's not fully true because we were at least a couple years into our relationship when that happened.
True.
Otherwise,
true.
That sounds very creepy. Anyway, I think I feel so I guess my thing is that I think that it's very, very possible that she and her husband would have a kid and fall in love with this kid. And in spite of how hard and horrible it is at moments, it would be great and they would love this kid forever. But I would say, given what she's explained about the culture in New Mexico and the woman's places in the home and all that, she should try to set some expectations with her husband about what his role in this is going to be. Because I think a lot of men, yourself included, kind of go into this without really thinking through the day-to-day management of keeping another person alive.
Oh, yeah. My life has changed dramatically in the past 3.5 years, obviously. And it is that you don't realize what you don't know, and you don't realize these sort of unconscious assumptions you have about parenting roles.
But it's also just, it's household management too. Like, I mean, obviously someone has to be paying attention to the kid 24/7, but also I think we were together for a pretty long time before we had kids, and we lived together for a long time. So there was a lot of stuff that slowly I accustomed you to realizing was partly your responsibility, like cleaning up after yourself and getting groceries. And
true, but I still say that my behavior has changed much more dramatically in the last 3 years than it did in the previous 7.
Yes, but what I say to my childless friends sometimes is, like, they'll be like, oh, I feel like I'm nagging my boyfriend because of this thing. And I will say, nag him as much as you possibly can now to make the burden less for you if you ever have kids with this person, because there's so much shared responsibility that you need this person to chip in on.
True. But there is a different ball game that we can't necessarily relate to when there are, you know, quote unquote, more traditional roles. If somebody is working and somebody is at home specifically as kids, those responsibilities aren't drawn along the same line as ours are.
Yeah, but it's still the thing where postpartum, you're kind of like lifeless and just trying to survive. And
yes,
if someone is not taking it upon themselves to go to the grocery store and get edible food that doesn't take 3 hours to prepare,
yeah,
they are dead weight and they are dragging you down.
Well, I want to hit another aspect of this, which is the husband's not that into kids, and everyone says, well, he will be. And I'll say that there is an evolutionary explanation that backs up that argument, which is when children are born, statistically, they look much more like their fathers. This is a hunter-gatherer thing, because when women have babies, obviously, this cavewoman knows it's theirs. It came out of them. But dads don't necessarily know. Their participation in it thus far was 9 months
ago. Why genetically babies come out looking more like their dads.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And so
I would say, like,
I think there is not, being a dad and seeing this baby and seeing yourself in it, that is a totally different thing than just loving babies in general.
You know? I will say, this is, like, again, another case for paternity leave, because, you know, women get maternity mm-hmm. leave and then men often don't. And then, you know, there's already so much that the man feels like, oh, well, I can't breastfeed. I can't do that. I guess this is my job. And then men don't bond with the baby as early as they could.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you were bottle feeding or your husband took paternity leave and really devoted himself to connecting with the baby early on, there's more of a chance that he's going to start to take responsibility for things.
True. We're starting to talk that's all true. I think we're talking about a little bit two separate things. But I think there also is something natural which happens as a dad. This happened to me, and statistically this happens, which is dads have a harder time connecting with their kids when they're newborns. And I know, like, when they're brand new and you were breastfeeding, and that was the first big realization for me that this infant truly needed you in a direct
right.
way.
Well, okay, some of this is, like, the facts at hand. But a lot of it is that men have been conditioned to think that the emotional labor of taking care of a household and taking care of the people around them is not their responsibility. And so they're very clunky in their attempts to take part in that. And that's why I would say to her, I don't think it's impossible. She knows her husband better than I do, so I don't know what his ability is to cook and clean and care for another human being. But she, depending on his, like, current level of interest, I think she needs to set some firm boundaries and expectations as to what how he needs to step up in the future when there is this demanding person entering their
lives. Sure, yeah. Well, what you're talking about is responsibility, you know, for raising this child.
But not just responsibility. It's paying attention to the people in the room around you. Like, women tend to be better at reading a room and noticing when other people around them are unhappy or need a drink or, like, they're just keyed in to the overall well-being of the group. And men don't see that as their responsibility. And I don't think that's not genetic. That's conditioned by culture.
Sure. I think that's all great and valid. I think something that she's worrying about that's not necessarily tied to that is that is him having a being connected, feeling like...
I'm not worried about the connection. I mean, yes, it might take him a little longer than her because this baby came out of her and her body is like physically telling her to love the baby. Yeah. That's not what I'm worried about. What I'm worried about is the new mom feeling of feeling like you're dying and no one is helping you.
Yeah. 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 Big time. But on that other point, just a study, something I heard about that was great. Did I already talk about this? That dad's peak interest in kids tends to sort of peak at 3, whereas mom's peak connection to their child is much younger.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that's true, but
so that
again,
might be something that happens where your husband's not, like, baby-obsessed.
I understand that to be true, but I also am very skeptical of a lot of this data coming out that seems to paint a picture of, like, well, this is the way it is, and women are just more locked in, and it doesn't... All of this data doesn't account for the ways people are conditioned to behave by society and the way men are told that things are not their responsibility.
I think this will be a continuing theme in the podcast where Beth is going to give you, she's going to always think first and give you the sort of the societal implications of expectations on behavior. And my, of course, I'm going to go to the science of it.
But
and the explanation is going to be in the middle of these two things, for sure.
Like, studies don't paint a full picture of the world. Studies are conducted by people with an agenda and with very specific sets of data that don't tell the whole story. So if we're not giving men in this country paternity leave, that accounts for a large portion of this disconnect they feel between themselves and their babies.
I agree with you 1,000,000%. But I'm not going to – you sometimes disregard the science of it more than I would. And I'm just saying, in the middle of this Venn diagram, the truth lies in the middle of our Venn diagram. Fair?
I don't know what you're saying.
I'm just saying, don't discount data. It means something.
I'm just saying, I don't. We've had data for hundreds of years. It's never told the whole story.
No, of course not.
Medical studies tend to study only men, and that's still true. And it's horrifying that even recent medical studies about breast cancer have been conducted exclusively on men, and that's insane.
Yes, that is insane. So, Aubrey, we don't know. We hope it goes great.
I know, Aubrey.
Beth is giving you...
Here's what you do, Aubrey. It's baby steps, but you try to leave him floundering as much as you can these days with the groceries, with the cleaning, see where he can step up and give him an opportunity to grow. And he will slowly become a partner.
And I'll say, when this baby is born, he will see himself in this baby, and that will be his main point of interest, is himself. And it's hardwired to see yourself and go, I must protect this thing.
If he's a loving, attentive partner to you, I think he can be to your kid. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, that part's fine. Whew. We raised more questions than we answered, but I felt good about it. Good luck, Aubrey. We don't know. Okay, before we go, we just have one more quick question from a listener. Here we go. This question is actually anonymous, and it's a doozy, Beth, and I think you're going to like it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here's the question. Do you think it's possible that babies actually know more than us, but in the process of learning how to communicate and exist as adult humans, they forget it all until they eventually rejoin the cosmos? Explain. I think we'll have different answers to this, and I'm going to let you go first.
I think it's possible.
Okay. I don't. Great, and that has been Listeners Wanna Knows.
This has been We Knows Parenting. If you want to hear more of me, Beth, you can find me on the Reductress Minute podcast.
And if you'd like some hilarious children's entertainment, check out the Story Pirates podcast that I host as well.
If you have any parenting questions, send them to weknowspod@gmail.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at weknowspod.
And if you have any weird, complex, intense, insane, or relatable parenting hypothetical situations that you'd like to send us for our Would You Knows segment, you can send those along as well. And have yourselves a great day. Please, please do it for us. We'll see you next time. Bye!
Me.